You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service. Welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Sunday, November 28th, although today is Monday, November 29th. Support for this reading comes from the DuPaco R.W. Hoffer Foundation. I'm Bernadette.
And I'm Pat.
And here is our first story.
Out of the Shadows. While local agencies that work with those reporting incidents of sexual violence have seen a recent uptick in reports, their staff members believe the numbers correspond to more people feeling comfortable coming forward. According to the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, more than one in three women and one in four men experience sexual violence in their lifetime. But these numbers likely are low because many incidents are not reported. Federal data for 2016 to 2020 shows the climb and then fall regarding the number of rapes and sexual assaults nationwide. The data shows there were about 298,000 such crimes in 2016, 394,000 in 2017, 735,000 in 2018, 459,000 in 2019, and 320,000 in 2020, according to the U.S. Department of Justice's Bureau of Justice Statistics. In contrast, the Dubuque Police Department saw its sexual crime reports fall from 2016 to 2018, then climb in 2019 and 2020. Joey Taylor, Executive Director of Riverview Center, said she believes a local uptick in sexual violence reports to that organization might be a result of people feeling more comfortable sharing their stories after hearing about so many others going through similar things. We as a society are opening our eyes to the prevalence of sexual violence and we're listening, she said. I look at this in a more positive light. More people are comfortable coming forward now. Organizations and area colleges also continue to work on outreach to let people know what services are available after a sexual assault. Those efforts also might be contributing to people feeling more comfortable reporting sexual violence, Taylor said. Sometimes the process is hard to come to grips with, and we don't push one way or another on what services are best, she said. We spend time helping clients decide what is right for them at the time. If you've been in that position, you know how gut-wrenching it is to help pick up the pieces. We spend little time thinking about perpetrators. Reporting incidents. The Dubuque Police Department has seen an increase in recent years of sexual crime reports, according to data provided by Lieutenant Ted McClyman. The data covers crimes of first, second, and third degree sexual abuse, as well as lascivious acts with a child, indecent acts with a child, assault with intent to commit sexual abuse, and enticing. The Clefery Act also requires colleges and universities to report campus crime data, including sexual crimes. Local college officials refer to that data in regards to statistics for those local institutions. Currently, the Office of Post-Secondary Education of the U.S. Department of Education has Clery Act required data from 2017 to 2019, the most recent data available. According to online data, University of Dubuque reported one incident of rape each in 2017 and 2018, and four in 2019. Clark College reported one incident in 2018 and two in 2019. Loras College reported three incidents of rape in 2018 and two each in 2017 and 2019. No incidents of rape were reported in that time frame by either Northeast Iowa Community College or Southwest Wisconsin Technical College.
Are TIF projects worthwhile, a worthwhile investment for Dubuque? Proponents and critics are divided on the need to use the tax increment financing to boost development. To some, tax increment financing is the backbone of economic development, but to others, it's an unnecessary carrot to attract businesses. Since 2010, the City of Dubuque has utilized TIF as an incentive for 24 business developments, promising up to nearly $35 million in future property tax revenues as part of the agreements involving $403.4 million in investments from businesses and the creation of 684 new jobs. Through TIA, taxes based on the incremental increases to a property's value are rebated back to the business. The financing is included in development agreements, in which developers or businesses typically commit to a certain level of investment and/or job creation. A recent example is Simon's Pet Food. In one of the major recent business developments in Dubuque, the company is investing $80 million locally as it opened its new manufacturing operation in the city. Under a 10-year TIF agreement with the city, about $3 million of property taxes will be rebated over that decade. Rick Dickinson, President and CEO of the Greater Dubuque Development Corporation, said, TIF is an essential method of creating incentives for companies to move to and expand in Dubuque. It's a most important financial tool we have to attract new businesses, Dickinson said. It's especially important in a rural state. In Dubuque, the agreements typically last for 10 years. After that time, a property again is subject to full property taxes. For smaller cities, the appeal of TIF is clear, Dickinson said. Unlike the larger cities, which have more resources and infrastructure, the TIF allows smaller communities to offer incentives to employers and financially compete with other cities. However, opponents of TIF contend that it is often overused by cities to attract businesses that already were likely to come to or expand in that community. When a business is deciding a location, other economic factors are more important than TIF funding, said Peter Fisher, Professor Emeritus of Urban Planning at the University of Iowa and Research Director at the Common Good Iowa. Access to markets, transportation, and other benefits being near a rail line, those things matter more than tax incentives. Fisher has studied the use of TIF in Iowa. He said of the numerous instances in which TIF was used by several municipalities in the state, only about 10 to 15% of those deals hinged on the incentives provided. However, he added that many cities cannot afford to risk not offering the TIF and losing a potential employee to a neighboring city. If you get outbid and lose a company, there is a political price to pay, Fisher said. If you go overbid the TIF funds for a business, you aren't going to pay any political penalty at all, but you will pay if you lose that business. That pushes cities to offer more than they need to. While the city of Dubuque has used TIF to bring in new businesses, City Economic Development Director Jill Connors said that city officials more often utilize the financing for local businesses looking to expand or relocate within the city. Of the 24 business projects to receive TIF incentives from the city since 2010, only four were for businesses not already in Dubuque. A lot of our use of TIF is for job retention and creation with our existing companies. We want our existing businesses to thrive, and TIF helps them in those expectations. Ultimately, Fisher said that while TIF can boost a local economy and create jobs, city must also be careful to not divert too much of their property taxes to benefit businesses. It's easy to overdo it and abuse it at the expense of residents, Fisher said. There needs to be a conservative and responsible use of TIF.
Holiday market should be held in Millwork District. Tri-State residents can cross off gifts on their holiday shopping lists at a Merry Millwork Market, which will take place in downtown Dubuque next weekend. The outdoor holiday market, hosted by the Millwork Night Market Team, Wicked River Event Productions, and Gronin in Dubuque, will be held from 4 to 8 p.m. Friday, December 3rd, and 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday, December 4th. Vendors will be located within the courtyard of the Schmidt Innovation Center, as well as on East 10th Street between Jackson and Washington Street. Attendees can warm up under the market's tent and browse the offerings of more than 30 local vendors selling crafts, food, and drinks. Friday night's schedule of events includes a performance by Du Hoc Pella, Dolores College a cappella choir, as well as a tree lighting ceremony and photos with Santa. On Saturday, horse and carriage rides will be available throughout the day, along with holiday magic tricks, carolers, and a performance by Dubuque-based Adams Dance Connection. All proceeds from the event benefit the Millwork Collective, a group of nonprofits located in the Schmidt Innovation Center, 900 Jackson Street. For more information, visit MerryMillWorkMarket.com.
Person who makes a difference. A Dubuque police officer driven to giving. Travis Kramer says you need a certain drive to more fully give back to your community. You have to find something that you're driven toward, Kramer said. Find something that interests you. There is no shortage of organizations that need help. If a volunteer has the proper drive, Kramer said, you can be motivated and put your whole heart into it. That's really how you're going to benefit the organization. Kramer's drive is well known to the Reverend Phil Gibbs, pastor of Dubuque's Church of the Resurrection. Travis is a great guy, Gibbs said. The Kramer family members are very much an active part of our parish. Kramer has spent the past 22 years as a member of the Dubuque Police Department, where he has risen to the rank of corporal and currently serves as property and evidence coordinator. Outside of the Dubuque Law Enforcement Center, Kramer serves the community as a volunteer fundraiser for Special Olympics Iowa. As a member of an adult community for a local Boy Scout troop, and through varied tasks he and his family members provide at Resurrection. We are grateful to have them a part of our parish family, Gibbs said. Gibbs said Travis, his wife Maggie, and their children have served the church in a variety of roles, from the family routinely greeting parishioners before Mass, helping with the mobile food pantry, and participating in the church prayer chain. Gibbs said Travis also has been active in a men's faith support group that meets Saturday morning at the church, known as That Man Is You. Faith is important to my wife and myself, as it is teaching it to our kids, Kramer said. Being involved is a way of giving back. At Resurrection, currently I'm on the Pastoral Council, the Security Committee and Buildings and Ground Committee. My wife and I, in 2019, were co-chairs of the Resurrection Festival. We really like the sense of community. A retired member of the Dubuque County Sheriff's Department, Dale Schneider, first prompted Kramer to volunteer with Special Olympics about 8 years ago. The statewide nonprofit organization provides high-quality training and competition for children and adults with intellectual disabilities. It's personal to me because my 12-year-old daughter has cerebral palsy, Kramer said. She doesn't participate in Special Olympics, but she participates with some adaptive sports through a local organization, ARC Advocates. These children just want to be like everybody else. Kramer has stood on the roof of the Dubuque's Duncan location for the Cop on the Roof Special Olympics fundraiser and has helped fundraise for the organization at local restaurants. Kramer describes his volunteer experience as personally rewarding. It would be hard to explain to someone who has never volunteered, but by giving, that's when you actually receive, he said.
Homeowners brace for high heating bills. In the Midwest, natural gas prices are expected to jump 49% over last winter. Area homeowners likely will see a significant increase in the cost of heating their homes this winter due to a combination of economic and environmental factors. The U.S. Energy Information Administration predicts that U.S. houses heated primarily with natural gas, which account for nearly half the country's homes, will spend an average of 30% more than last winter on heating. In the Midwest, the projected increase is even higher at 49% for natural gas users. That increase, which could fluctuate based on winter temperatures, is due to higher energy prices, volatile markets, and a winter that expected to be colder than recent ones, according to EIA. Nicole Breitbach, Senior Community Affairs Manager for Black Hills Energy, confirmed that tri-state customers should be ready for increased cost. We estimate that our Iowa residential consumers of natural gas should be prepare for an increase of 60% in the cost of the gas as compared to last winter. According to Breitbach, the rising prices are linked to market fluctuations that impacted natural gas storage levels. In particular, a warmer than typical summer led to increased use of electricity, which was frequently generated by burning natural gas. People were running their air conditioning and energy was so in demand over the summer that affects the natural gas market. The financial increase of impact gas prices for each customer largely will be dependent on that home's level of gas usage. Breitbach advises homeowners to winterize their houses by sealing cracks, installing weather strips around windows and doors, and scheduling a furnace inspection to maximize efficiency. Resources such as the Federal Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program also can help those struggling to pay heating and energy bills. In the Dubuque area, LIHEAP is administered by Hawkeye Area Community Action Program. October and November are always busy times for our LIHEAP crew, and this year is no different. We've taken over 5,000 applications and anticipate that's about half the number we will take before the program year ends. The Wisconsin Home Energy Assistance Program administers several benefits initiatives. Amy Esser, WHEAP coordinator with Grant County Department of Social Services, said staff haven't noticed a substantial increase in applications. They have received 1,093 applications since October 1, as compared to 1,073 at this time last year. However, she anticipates that rising energy costs could trigger more requests for crisis assistance, which are funds distributed when applications face emergencies like a disconnect notice and their regular benefits don't cover the cost. I foresee maybe giving up more crisis assistance because the price of gas is going up this year, she said.
Businesses welcome Small Business Saturday. When Dubuque resident Haley Jansen goes in search of clothing, decor, or holiday gifts, her footsteps frequently lead to a local boutique. I like to shop local because there's a more personal touch to it, she said, while browsing the racks at Classy and Chic Boutique at 1065 Jackson Street in Dubuque last Saturday. I know the owners. They remember my style, and when I shop small, I know my money is going to a local family. For over a decade, the day after Black Friday has been declared Small Business Saturday, and consumers have been urged to patronize local shops like Classy and Chic as they check off items on their holiday gift lists. In return, many businesses frequently give special deals or giveaways. At Classy and Chic, those who spend more than $100 could select a gift box that held a gift certificate ranging from $5 to $100. It's very important to support small businesses, especially with last year and the pandemic. I think a lot of small businesses are still recovering, said owner Donnie Weber. Icy roads put a damper on customers at many local establishments Saturday morning. But as the temperatures warmed, shoppers could be seen strolling down Bluff Street in Dubuque and popping in and out of nearby shops. Local boutique KB & Company at 331 Bluff Street spearheaded a multi-boutique giveaway in partnerships with local shops, AJ's Boutique, Fig Leaf, and the Midwest Girl. Purchases at each business got the customer entered into a drawing for a gift basket featuring items from all four stores. It's all about coming together and being community over competition, said Katie Martin, co-owner of KB & Company. Martin described businesses like hers as an integral cog in the area's economic scene. She also touted the welcoming atmosphere created by small local shops. We're creating an experience. When you come into my store, it's not just about the purchase you make, it's about the feeling you have. To further welcome customers, the business offered a free gift for the first 20 customers who spent more than $25 at KB & Company. Jennifer Pickett, buyer and director at Gap.
No area deaths linked to COVID-19 reported since Wednesday. Levels of community transmission remains high in all 10 local counties, CDC reports. The Telegraph Herald is recapping changes in local COVID-19 testing and vaccination, publishing updates on Thursdays and Sundays. Saturday's developments included: no COVID-19 related deaths were reported in the local Wisconsin or Illinois County since Wednesday. The state of Iowa only updates its COVID-19 case and related data, death data, on Wednesdays, so no information was available Saturday. In local Wisconsin counties, 92 new COVID death cases were reported among Grant County residents since Wednesday. There were 23 new cases in that time in Crawford County, 21 in Iowa County, and 17 cases in Lafayette County. In Joe Davies County, Illinois, the numbers were not updated since Wednesday. There were 35 people with COVID-19 hospitalized at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center and Unity Point Health Findlay Hospital as of Wednesday, according to data provided by the hospitals to the Telegraph Herald. The state of Iowa recently discontinued reporting county-level hospitalization data. As of Saturday, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention again rated the level of community transmission as high, the highest rating in all local 10 counties, unchanged from Wednesday. As of Saturday, 169,474 residents of the Telegraph Herald's coverage area were fully vaccinated, which represents 69.8% of the population that is at least 12 years old. For current information on Dubuque County vaccination opportunities, visit www.dubuquecounty.org/sleevesup. Local schools did not update their COVID-19 numbers since Wednesday, because school was not in session over the Thanksgiving holiday. As of Wednesday, 518,859 Iowa residents have been confirmed to have contracted the coronavirus, an increase of 10,346 from 1 week earlier. A total of 86 additional COVID-19 related deaths were reported, increasing the total to 7,354. The CDC reported that as of Saturday, 1,782,713 Iowans were fully vaccinated, which is 66.6% of the state's residents who are at least 12 years old. In Wisconsin, 8,134 new COVID-19 cases were reported since Wednesday, raising the state's total to 864,190. The state's related deaths increased by 64 to 8,964. As of Saturday, 3,452,517 Wisconsin residents had been fully vaccinated, which is 69.1% of the state's residents who are at least 12 years old. In Illinois, there have been 1,784,900 COVID-19 cases and 26,313 death-related. Numbers have not been updated since Wednesday. As of Saturday, 7,759,273 Illinois residents had been fully vaccinated, 71.6% of the state's residents who are at least 12 years old.
It started again. You're listening to the Dubuque Telegraph Herald on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. Your reader is Bernadette
and Pat.
If you have any comments on this or on any IRIS program, please call 243-6833 or toll free at 877-404-4733. 1-800-273-8047. And don't forget, this and many other IRIS programs are available from our website at iowaradioreading.org. And now we return to the Telegraph Herald. In the obituaries for Sunday, we read the obituary of Janice L. Carroll of Asbury, Iowa. Janice Lee Carroll, 85, of Asbury, died on Thursday, November 25, 2021, at her home. Visitation will be from 9:30 to 10:45 a.m. Friday, December 3rd, at the Church of the Nativity. Mass of Christian burial for Janice will immediately follow at 11 a.m. Friday, December 23rd, at the Church of the Nativity, with Father Bob Tonelli as the celebrant. Janice was born August 3, 1936, the only child of Leon William and Olive Pearl Opperman, née Gordon. During her early years, Janice and her parents moved frequently, living in many small towns in eastern Iowa and Wisconsin, eventually settling in Arlington, Iowa. Janice graduated from the Arlington High School in 1954. Soon thereafter, she went off to Chicago, where she worked for American Airlines and met her life's companion, James E. Carroll. They married on March 4, 1961, and lovingly raised four children. Once their youngest started school, Jan returned to the travel agency, this time as the manager of the Best Travel in Vernon, Illinois. Jan loved to travel for work, for fun, with family and with friends all over the world. Jan had a great love and appreciation for antiques, knowledgeable about the history and lineage of glassware, jewelry, and collectibles of all kinds. She enjoyed bargaining at flea markets, garage, and estate sales, and almost never left empty-handed. She found joy in bringing new life to an old treasure, and was even more excited when she could share these refurbished gifts with family and friends. Above all, Jan's enduring legacy will be the love she shared with her husband, children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. She will be deeply missed. She is survived by her husband, James, her children, Jim, Leonora De La Torre, Carroll of Coloma, Michigan, Joe, Martha Carroll of Barrington, Illinois, Mary Ellen Bennett Cook Carroll of Dubuque, and Shannon Greg Krause of Lake Villa, Illinois. And she had also grandchildren. The family extends our deep gratitude to Becky Kraft, parish nurse at the Church of the Nativity and Hospice of Dubuque. In lieu of flowers, please consider a donation to support the ongoing ministry of hospice.
Louise M. McGranahan of Iola, Wisconsin. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. Monday, November 29th, Erickson Funeral Home, Darlington, Wisconsin, and 10 to 10:45 a.m. Tuesday, November 30th, Cuba City, Wisconsin, United Methodist Church. Service 11 a.m. Tuesday at the church.
Donald L. Price of Dubuque, visitation 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, November 30th, with Masonic service at 7 p.m. and from 10 to 11 a.m. Wednesday, December 1st, at the Law Jones Funeral Home in Elizabeth, Illinois. Services 11 a.m. Wednesday at the funeral home.
Harry W. Shady, Otter Creek, Iowa, visitation 4 to 8 p.m. Monday, November 29th, Carson Celebration of Life Center, Maquoketa, Celebration of Life, 11 a.m. Tuesday, November 30th at the center. Marla V. Smith, Dubuque, Mass of Christian Burial, 1 p.m. Monday, November 29th, Clare House Chapel, Mount St. Francis Center. Thomas J. Kaiser, Valparaiso, Indiana. Thomas J. T.J. Kaiser, 44, of Valparaiso, Indiana, formerly of Dubuque, passed away Wednesday, November 24th, at St. Mary's Medical Center in Indiana, surrounded by family. He was born in Dubuque on September 16, 1977, son of Thomas A. and Mary Schroeder Kaiser. T.J. enjoyed cooking and smoking meats all the time, occasionally visiting wineries, traveling to Tennessee, and just started some small farming. He was also known to have a profound love of Star Wars. Survivors include his children, Holden and Piper Kaiser of Chicago, his father, Thomas Kaiser of Dubuque, siblings, Tammy Bill McDermott of Ely, Iowa, Sue Lee Klein of Rickardsville, Iowa, Todd Stacy Kaiser of Dubuque, and fiance Michelle Hopkins and her children, Wyatt, Isabel, and Sophie. He was preceded in death by his mother, Mary Schroeder Kaiser, brother Jeffrey Kaiser, and grandparents Eugene and Agnes Kaiser, and Irvin and Pauline Schroeder. Visitation will be held on Monday, November 29th, from 3 to 6 at Moeller Funeral Home, 104 Roosevelt Road in Valparaiso, where services will follow. Interment will be private. A celebration of life will be held in Dubuque at a later time. Mary G. Woodkey, Fenimore, Wisconsin. Mary G. Woodkey, 71, of Fenimore, died on Tuesday, November 23, 2021. Arrangements are pending. Larson Family Funeral Home in Fenimore is assisting the family.
Ronald H. Klein, Platteville, Wisconsin, formerly of Dubuque, Iowa, died on November 21, 2021, at the Edenbrook of Platteville. A private family gathering will be held at the Melby Funeral Home and Crematory in Platteville. Burial will be at St. Peter's Lutheran Church Cemetery, Reidsville, Wisconsin. Those wishing to honor Ron's memory may wish to make a memorial donation to Loras College of Dubuque, Iowa, the University of Wisconsin La Crosse of La Crosse, Wisconsin, or the Tri-State Veterans Memorial Association of Dubuque, Iowa. Online condolences can be made at www.melbyfh.com. Ron was born in Reedsburg, Wisconsin on September 21, 1940, the son of Harold and Catherine Klein. He grew up in Reedsburg and graduated from Webb High School in 1958. He graduated from the University of Wisconsin, La Crosse, in 1963 with a Bachelor of Science degree in mathematics. He served in the United States Army from September 1963 until his honorable discharge in September of 1965. Ron was employed by Olin Corporation in Wisconsin before moving to Dubuque, Iowa in 1970 to accept a position at the A.Y. McDonald Manufacturing Company. In 1972, he began his career with the John Deere Dubuque Works, where he held positions as computer systems trainer and budget analyst. In 1988, Ron left John Deere to pursue a career change. He received a Master of Arts degree in Applied Psychology from Loras College in 1992. While he was studying at Loras, he was a leading member of the college tennis team and earned a letter at the age of 50. Subsequent to his graduation from Loras until his retirement, Ron held mental health and substance abuse counseling positions at Jane Addams Mental Health Centers in Freeport and Galena, and at the Area Substance Abuse Council in Maquoketa, Iowa. In Illinois, he was a licensed mental health counselor and a licensed clinical professed counselor. In In Iowa, he was a licensed master social worker and a certified alcohol and drug counselor. Ron was a resident of Dubuque for most of his life until he achieved his long-held desire to come back to his home state of Wisconsin when he moved into the Park Place Senior Apartments. He was a lifelong fan of Green Bay Packers, the Wisconsin Badgers, and the Milwaukee Brewers. He is survived by his son, Greg Klein of Denver, and his brother, David Klein of Chicago. Harriet C. Kopus. Harriet C. Kopus, 96, of Fenimore, died on Wednesday, November 17th. The Larson Funeral Family Home in Fenimore is assisting the family.
Susan J. Shrunk. Round Lake Beach, Illinois. Susan Shrunk was born June 11, 1951, in Dubuque, Iowa. She attended the Visitation High School, 1969, and the University of Northern Iowa, 1973. She married John Dave Shrunk on May 25, 1973, and had four beautiful children, all raised in Dubuque. Susan was a long-standing member of the Nativity Parish until relocating to Round Lake Beach, Illinois in 2011, where she found a wonderful community at the Annunciation of Our Lady Episcopalian Church. Susan was an active member of the community, preparing the many Easter vigil receptions, coordinating the children's chapel program, and chairing the annual holiday cookie walk. Susan enjoyed being surrounded by her nine gorgeous grandchildren, Abigail, Riley, Charlie, Nathaniel, Vienna, John, Peter, Anderson, Addison, Lincoln, and Sonia, and would tell anyone who would listen how special each of them were. She especially loved watching them perform on stage or play their sports. Susan passed away on November 20th, 2021. The family is incredibly thankful to the doctors and staff at Advocate Condell Hospital for their great care. Susan is survived by her husband Dave, children Brian, Louise, CJ, Sasha, Samantha, Mike, and Elizabeth Trent, all nine grandchildren, siblings Anita, Jim, Ellen, Jim, Sid, and David Shaw. She is preceded in death by her mother, Jane Schwartz, Paul and Francis Heavey, and brother-in-law Gary. Services will be held at Annunciation of Our Lady Church in Gurnee, Illinois, on November 27, 2021 at 2 p.m. with a luncheon following at the church. The family requests those in attendance wear Susan's favorite color, blue. A memorial site has been established in Susan's name for donations to the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation in lieu of flowers. Arrangements by Burnett Dane Funeral Home in Libertyville. For information, 847-369-3009 or share a memory at www.bernadettedane.com.
Michael J. Arthurfer, Piasta, Iowa. Michael J. Mike Arthurfer, 81, of Piasta, died on Thursday, November 25, 2021. Graveside services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, December 1st, at St. Catherine Cemetery in Dubuque. The Tri-State Cremation Center of East Dubuque is assisting the family.
Joan C. Knowles. Joan C. Knowles, 89, died on Wednesday, November 24, 2021. Funeral services will be held. Burial will be in Dubuque Memorial Gardens, Egelhoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory of Dubuque is assisting the family.
Joanne H. Clower, 82, of Dubuque, died on Thursday, November 25, 2021. Arrangements are pending. Engelhorf, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory at 2659 John F. Kennedy Road is assisting the family.
Terry J. Lang, Harpers Ferry, Iowa. Terry J. Lang, 72, of Harpers Ferry, died on Thursday, November 25, 2021. Visitation will be held from noon to 2 p.m. Saturday, December 4th, at St. Mary's Church in McGregor, where a mass of Christian burial will follow. Burial will be in Wauseka Cemetery in Wauseka, Wisconsin. Garrity Funeral Home of Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin, is assisting the family.
Bernard L. Keller of Stitzer, Wisconsin. Bernard was 85, and he died on Saturday, November 20th, 2021. Visitation will be held from 2 to 5 p.m. on Saturday, December 4th, and from 1 to 2 p.m. Sunday, December 5th, at the Stizer United Methodist Church. Burial will follow the service in the Stizer Methodist Cemetery. Larson Family Funeral Home in Fenimore is assisting the family.
Richard F. McFarland. Richard F. McFarland, 62, of Dubuque, died Wednesday, November 24, 2021. Private family services will be held. Tri-State Cremation Center of East Dubuque, Illinois, is assisting the family.
Joan Burning of Galena, 92, died on Thursday, November 25, 2021. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, December 2nd, at the Furlong Funeral Chapel of Galena. Complete arrangements are pending.
Ruth E. Fivecoat, Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Ruth Fivecoat, 88, of Cedar Rapids, formerly of Lancaster, Wisconsin, died on Tuesday, November 9, 2021. A celebration of life will be held at 11 a.m. Sunday, May 7, 2022, at Dubuque Memorial Gardens. Larson Family Funeral Home of Fenimore, Wisconsin, is assisting the family.
John H. March, 73, of Mount Pleasant, formerly of Dyersville, died on Thursday, November 25, 2021. A vigil service will be held at 4 p.m. Monday, November 29th, at the Olson Powell Memorial Chapel of Mount Pleasant, where a visitation will follow until 8 p.m. A mass of Christian burial will take place at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, November 30th, at St. Alphonsus Catholic Church in Mount Pleasant, followed by burial in the church cemetery.
Roy E. Danz, Livingston, Wisconsin. Roy Danz, 95, of Livingston, died on Friday, November 26, 2021. Visitation will be held from 9:30 to 11 a.m. Tuesday, November 30th, at Soman Larson Funeral Home in Montford, where services will follow. Burial will take place after services in the Rock Church Cemetery in Clifton Township.
Monica S. McCartney, 68, of Montford, formerly of Stitzer, died on Monday, November 22, 2021. The Larson Family Funeral Home in Fenimore, Wisconsin, is assisting the family.
James E. Horner, Lancaster, Wisconsin. James Horner, 58, of Lancaster, died on Thursday, November 25, 2021. Visitation will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. Wednesday, December 1st, at the Fenimore United Methodist Church, where services will follow. Burial will follow services at the Hillside Cemetery in Platteville.
Florence E. Sanders, 87, of East Dubuque, died on Saturday, November 27, 2021. Visitation will be held from 3 to 6 p.m. Tuesday, November 30th, at the Miller Funeral Home in East Dubuque. Complete arrangements are pending. And we turn now to some sports news. for this area. The Dubuque Senior and Western Dubuque made special runs in qualifying for the Iowa State Tournament this past March. If not for being placed in the same sub-state path as the Rams, Dubuque Hempstead may have joined them. It was a successful year last season, and city teams in the Mississippi Valley Conference will have a lot to try and live up to this winter. Here's a capsule look at some city teams this season. Hempstead. The coach is Kurt Dutch. The key players, Cameron Fens, Kelly Strohmeyer, and Nate Kasbauer, Noah Petting. The outlook. The Mustangs were primed to reach the state tournament last season behind the electric scorers Jamari Smith and TH Player of the Year, Michael Dwox. But things went off course with an upset loss to Senior in the sub-state semifinals on their home floor, no less. Fens and Strohmeyer are the only starters back in the fold, but Kleesbauer and Pettiger saw minutes last winter and will plug in for unexpected bigger roles. But the real story for the Mustangs will be Fenn, a 6'11" monster who could be a tremendous force this season. Fenn's averaged 9.7 points and 6.1 rebounds last season. And with Dwox and Smith graduated, those numbers could skyrocket this winter. Fenz is one who can bully his way in the post and dunk with the best of them. And he's drawing plenty of NCAA Division I interest. And he's hoping to pay that off with a great season to mask his stature. At Senior, the key players are Sam Atkins, Jacob Williams, and Hayden Christopher. Hayden's Jacob Smyer. After a slow start, the Senior Leighton Rames just kept getting better and better as last season progressed, leading to an upset of Hempstead in the sub-state and reaching the Iowa State Tournament once again. Their season ended with a competitive quarterfinal defeat to the number one Cedar Falls, and that ended the careers of starters Kane McWilliams, Max Link, Kedrick Watkins-Hogue, Tyler Schuster, and Jim Boniface. All five starters have graduated, and the Rams will have a totally new look this season. Atkins started about half the games last winter, and so he does hold experience, averaging 6.5 points, 3.1 rebounds, and 2.8 assists. Beyond him, all the other players are promising newcomers.
City teams bring back experience. Last year, Dubuque Wallert caught fire late in the season to make its first state tournament, first since 2013, and Dubuque Senior compiled its first winning season in 8 years. Dubuque Hempstead and Western Dubuque had just 4 wins apiece, but with a clean slate, the four city schools are ready for another competitive season in Mississippi Valley Conference. Here is a capsule look at the city's teams competing in the MVC. Hempstead coach Ryan Rush. Key players Carly Hodgson, Camden Kay, Chandler Hauslog, Jalen Tiggs. The Mustangs have a good balance in senior leadership with Hodgson, honorable mention, all-conference, Tiggs, and Ashley Glennon. They also bring back Kay, honorable mention, all-conference, and Housing, who showed a lot of promise.
That brings us to the end of today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Sunday, November 28th. I'm your reader, Bernadette.
And Pat.
So Support for this reading comes from the DePaco R. W. Hoffer Foundation. The Telegraph Herald can be heard each weekday at 2 p.m. All programs heard on IRIS are intended solely for the blind and print handicapped. If you have any questions or comments on this or on any IRIS program, please call our office toll-free at 877-404-4747. And thanks for listening.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is Earth Date. Volcanic eruptions can affect global warming or cooling, and one of the ways we measure their impact is by looking at a lunar eclipse. To understand this strange connection, we need to know a bit about Earth's atmosphere. The lowest part, the troposphere, extends from the surface up 4 to 12 miles. It's where Earth's weather happens. The stratosphere above that is dry and less active. Dust and ash particles carried into the troposphere by volcanoes, fires, or other sources will quickly fall or be rained out. But when a large volcano erupts, it blasts ash and gas through the troposphere into the stratosphere. There, sulfur gas forms microscopic droplets of sulfuric acid. These sulfate aerosols can remain suspended for years. One way scientists measure them is by looking at lunar eclipses. If they're murky and dim, the stratosphere is clouded with aerosols. If they're bright and defined, the stratosphere is clear. Large volcanoes in the past have put up enough aerosols to reflect the sun's heat and cool the surface of Earth by as much as 1 degree Fahrenheit. But in the last 2 decades, the stratosphere has been remarkably clear, which has allowed more solar energy to reach Earth. Some scientists estimate this has caused half the global temperature increase seen during this period. Another example of how Earth's processes are linked in surprising and complex ways. I'm Scott Tinker.
Earth Date is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more Earth Date stories at earthdate.org.